Hello again, everyone. My name is Gerald Tostaworek. I'm a licensed real estate agent in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and you're listening to a special market update edition of The Real World of Real Estate. Well, folks, today it's all by my lonesome here. And so what I'm going to do today is I'm going to go over some detailed market statistics of where we were in 2020, where we're going in 2021. I'm going to start with the residential market first, and then we'll move into the commercial market, and we'll go into the different categories of commercial. I'll be doing some reading at some point, so grab a cup of coffee to keep yourself awake, but I'll try my best to keep it fun and interesting. So what I'm going to do is start with a light touch on the Canadian market, only be a couple minutes, and then I'll move into the Edmonton, Calgary, Alberta marketplace, and then we'll go into the commercial marketplace after that. I will cut this podcast into chapters so that you can pick the appropriate chapter. So let's get started with a quick look at the Canadian residential marketplace. I'm just going to actually read this report directly because it's a very short report, so it won't take me too long here. So let's have a look at the Canadian residential market. So the Canadian Real Estate Association updated its forecast for home sales activity, needless to say, with things going on these days. Current trends and outlooks for the housing market fundamentals suggest that activity will remain relatively healthy through 2021, with prices either continuing to climb or remaining steady in all regions. Economic activity continues to improve slowly following the initial stages of the pandemic. Over the past several years, record levels of international immigration, low interest rates, and an increasing share of millennials entering the home buying years have helped make the housing market a significant source of strength for the Canadian economy. The recent government support programs for individuals and businesses have also helped the overall economy through the most severe parts of the pandemic to date. I'll actually get a bit more into that when I talk about the Edmonton and Calgary marketplaces and the chief economist for CIBC, Benjamin Tal, his comments. Mortgage interest rates have declined to record lows in 2020, including the Bank of Canada's benchmark five-year rate used by Canada's largest banks to qualify applicants under the B20 mortgage stress test. With the Bank of Canada committing to keep interest rates low into 2023, mortgage interest rates are expected to remain near current levels throughout the year. Recent national sales trends have improved more than anticipated over the second half of 2020. New listings in most of the country have also recovered. However, while sales activity rebounded to record high levels, new listings only recovered to about their five-year average in most markets. The relative strength of demand for homes compared with supply has meant sales activity has been eroding active inventory, which was already scarce in many markets pre-pandemic. That said, this has been a trend since 2015. The increase in demand has impacted every part of the country, including the prairies in Newfoundland and Labrador. While these regions aren't experiencing the same intensity of upward price pressures as the rest of the country, compared with previous years, demand is strengthening and prices have indeed started to increase. Despite the historic setback to the spring market caused by the pandemic, CREA projects national sales to hit a record of 544,413 units in 2020, which those numbers should be out any day now if they're not already, representing an 11.1% increase from 2019 levels. The strength of the Canadian housing market was broad-based, with every province except Alberta registering a year-over-year increase in sales. British Columbia and Quebec stand out as large contributors to the overall gain. The national average price in 2020 is on track to have risen by 13.1% on an annual basis to just over $568,000, which of course will vary widely from market to market throughout the country. This reflects the current balance of supply and demand, which heavily favors sellers in many local markets. On a monthly basis, sales are forecast to ease back to more typical levels throughout 2021. However, presuming there's a more normal spring market this year, the year as a whole is expected to see more home sales than 2020. National home sales are forecast to rise by 7.2% to around 584,000 units this year. All provinces except Ontario are forecast to see increased sales activity in 2021 as low interest rates and improving economic fundamentals allow people to get into the markets where homes are available for sale. Ontario has seen strong demand for several years, particularly outside of Toronto, which has eroded active supply in the province. This shortage is expected to limit sales activity throughout 2021. The strength of demand, particularly for larger single-family properties, will drive the average price higher. So that's basically it, a very down and dirty, short and quick and to the point look at the Canadian marketplace. Let's now look at the Edmonton marketplace. Again, we're still in the residential market. So let's have a look at that. Now, this information is coming from the Realtors Association of Edmonton 2021 market forecast held earlier in January. A quick 2020 review. Starting in June, local and national housing markets experienced record-breaking highs. If you remember, in the second quarter after COVID hit, everything quieted down. Consumer preferences shifted towards single-family dwellings and away from condos to deal with the requirements of working from home. CIBC Chief Economist Benjamin Talt spoke more about this, and I'll be getting to his talk very shortly here. In January 2020, the Realtors Association of Edmonton had predicted 10,375 single-family sales. In actuality, we were just above that at 10,804. They predicted 4,150 condo unit sales. That was ended up being a little lower at 3,814. They predicted 1,778 duplexes, and that ended up being higher at 2,049. So they, in total, they predicted 16,673 unit sales, and the actual total was 17,036, so just a little bit higher than predicted. Okay, so let's have a look at CIBC Chief Economist Benjamin Tal's predictions for 2021, and he entitled his talk, After the Winter, because it's going to be a difficult winter, but things will get better. First, the positives. He started out with some positives. The U.S. will provide $2,000 relief per person. This will be no news to you by now if you're following that. And that positive integration will happen into the U.S., which has a negative downside. It will be more negative or more difficult for Canada under Joe Biden to attract immigrants, although we might gain some energy market share. Our reliance on the U.S. will rise. And the U.S. economy has fared better than Canada, even though the infection rate was higher. But Joe Biden will likely correct that, as they're calling it, lives versus livelihood. 2021 closures won't be as complete as 2020 because we now know better how to recover. Businesses are now better equipped to handle online economics than last year. And so productivity is increasing, something we didn't see and certainly didn't see coming in March of last year. And the end is coming, and some companies will be taking risks that it will end soon. Probably the biggest positive he mentioned, that Canada is spending more as a percentage of GDP than any other country, which will be a significant boost to the economy. And we'll talk a bit about the paying of that back. But for now, it's as we're going to see in a couple minutes, it's going to provide a significant boost to our economy as we recover. So the recession we have is unique in that it is very deep, but it's very narrow in that the number of affected industries is much narrower than any other recession and won't last as long. Mr. Tal's working assumption is that we will all be vaccinated by the second half of the year, which is what the folks in the know at the federal government have told him. Recovery will be from May to August, most likely, and it will be quite strong because the number of industries affected is small. There's already a number of industries that are into recovery. As well, This was a service-only recession, and goods are actually up. And service industries, for example, restaurants, can fire up much quicker than a manufacturing facility. So when the recovery does come, it will be much quicker to get everything into gear. We talked about the government spending. The federal government has been spending $7 for every dollar of declining wages. And because of this, income has actually risen at the fastest rate ever. That's right, fastest rate ever, even during this deep recession. Now, as well as rising income, spending has declined more among the high-income individuals because more of their money is on discretionary items, which none of us can spend right now, even if we wanted to. So this has led to savings rising significantly. Canadians are sitting on, quote-unquote, a mountain of cash. There is approximately $90 billion in personal deposits above the trend line, meaning savings has shot up that much in the last year since the government aid kicked in, and there's $80 billion in business deposits. So roughly 13% of spending is sitting in savings account. There's basically $170 billion burning a hole in our pockets. And indeed, there is the evidence is pointing strongly towards a lot of pent-up demand. The spending that we've been spending during the recession has been to the Amazons of the world. And once we have the green light, the spending will come in services, exactly where we need the jobs, and of course, many local service businesses. Remember, folks, support local. So one interesting development is where we may see a permanent increase in government spending from 15% of GDP to 17 to 19% through permanent changes to the EI system, national daycare, and maybe a change to the basic income program. So boy, we're going to have a whole podcast on that discussion. Now, current spending with all this COVID relief is a whopping 35% of GDP in Canada, but that, of course, is only temporary due to the pandemic and will cede rather quickly. The question is, how is this government going to finance this spending? Well, probably not in the immediate future, but Mr. Tal felt that within 2 years, we may see increases in capital gains taxes, more from carbon taxes, and even GST if needed. Already higher taxes are coming on big tech and options. He's not sure, just thinking out loud, how they are going to finance this increased spending. The Bank of Canada is basically printing money to finance the government, so the question is, how inflationary will this be? Mr. Tal felt it will be not that inflationary, as even though we have recovered substantially, we are still 4.8% below the GDP trend line before the recession. In the big recession of 2012 at its worst, we were 4.4% down. Now, because the Bank of Canada is buying government bonds to support the spending, it's already controlling 30% of the bond market. And at this rate, they will be controlling 50% by later this year, which is, to use his words, suboptimal, which is a good way to put it, to have the government controlling that much of the bond market. So they've already started reducing their buying of bonds from $5 billion a week to $4 billion, and by aiming their buying at longer-term five-year rate bonds to control the yield curve better. Why has the recession been so real estate-friendly? Well, when compared to interest rates in the 2008-2009 recession, real interest rates now are much lower. Additionally, 90% of those that lost their job are lower income and renters. Hence, the real estate market has not really been affected, but the rental market certainly has been. Because of these two factors, low interest rates and home buyers not losing jobs, maybe 40% of home price inflation that we're seeing right now is due to people buying larger, more expensive units. He felt that this is sustainable. December, by the time the stats come out, which will be any day now, we'll have seen a big jump in real estate activity and prices, but this is only because nobody is traveling, so they are buying houses. This will calm down as the economy softens in early 2021. It won't be negative, however, but it will soften. But beyond that, the housing market trajectory is sustainable because he feels the worst is over for Alberta. I hope he's right. The improvement will ironically be only because it's been so bad here already. His exact words were, when you don't have another negative, that's a positive. So I'm going with that. I'm running with that. There will still be elevated vacancy rates, and he feels there will be some oil price recovery, which will trigger more market recovery, and he feels we will have a strong spring and a very strong summer. The trend of moving out of condos and into bigger houses will slow down, and there will be a return to condos and the benefits they provide, the benefits of condo living, of course. So there's, in a nutshell, Mr. Tal's look at our upcoming year in the real estate market. I'm going to go into a little bit of an in-between kind of presentation here. Lynette Tremblay from Edmonton Global, which is our regional economic development arm, also made a presentation at the Realtors Association market forecast. And her presentation kind of touches all markets, residential, commercial. It's more of an economic look, and it also talks about upcoming industries in the area. So I think this is a good one for everyone. If you're interested in the residential market and the commercial market or the commercial market, this is a good one to listen to. So let's get into Ms. Tremblay's Edmonton Global presentation. So one thing that Edmonton Global has been noticing is that intangible assets are rapidly replacing tangible assets in the global economy. Since 1975, the value of the top 500 corporations on the S&P 500 has flipped from buildings, cash, inventory, and land, tangible assets, to patents, brand, data, and software, basically intangible assets. And this is also happening in Alberta, and COVID has accelerated this change literally overnight. And Ms. Tremblay disagreed somewhat with Mr. Tal that things will go back to normal and the world will not return to the office. One thing I didn't mention is that Mr. Tal felt people will be returning to the office after this is over. And there's a lot of different opinions on this. And I think we have to weigh all the reasons behind the different opinions. But from what I've heard so far, I'm of the opinion that the office market will return almost to where it was, probably with a little bit of work at home, because technology is going to eat into that for sure. But those of us that are working from home can't wait to get out of the house. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. But anyways, there are differing opinions on what will happen in the office marketplace. Businesses, though, they have noticed, Edmonton Global, is that businesses are spending less on brick and mortar and more on research and development. The top three spenders in R&D are Sanyo, Alphabet, which owns Google, and, surprisingly, Volkswagen. So in other words, everybody is getting into R&D and big tech and big data. Walmart's value comes primarily from their data. Interesting thing I did not know. And Suncor and Dow Chemicals are accelerating their machine learning, their big data, and their computing programs. So artificial intelligence, big data, those things are definitely really coming down the pipes now, and COVID has accelerated this somewhat. Now, this doesn't mean less workers. It just means working in different places, doing different jobs. People are crucial to designing and maintaining these initiatives, so she feels that people are becoming more valuable under the new economy. Edmonton Global feels that Edmonton is uniquely positioned to take advantage of this, as we have a high quality of life and a low cost of living. We've all heard of ESG, economic, social, and governance. Communities are being ranked on that, on their economic, social, and governmental factors, which we do fairly well on. Consumer spending and exports are a big part of our economy, so no wonder we were hit so hard. But one place they both agree is that pent-up demand is going to become unleashed here soon. Now, according to Shopify, consumers are now committed to virtual experiences, local businesses, and an appetite for local delivery and online businesses. Now, I will add a personal comment in here. Remember that Shopify does have a stake in the game, so their opinion on this may be a little biased because, of course, that kind of a commitment to virtual experiences and online shopping serves their business model well. So their opinion on this may be a little biased. No doubt we all know that online shopping has been increasing and that COVID has most certainly increased that. Where it all shakes out, time will tell. Okay, so the Edmonton area, Edmonton Global, feels can innovate and adapt to the new realities and even create new products, which are critical to surviving in this new economy. She mentioned plant-based protein food and beverages, nutraceuticals, and nutraceuticals are the fastest growing agricultural crop these days, and even Maple Leaf Foods is investing heavy in plant proteins. And needless to say, pharmaceuticals and PPE, personal protective equipment, have been hot topics as of late. They are expected to continue growing over the next 5 to 10 years, as well as energy and health-based artificial intelligence, which is wonderful for our region because we have energy and health-based economies. Edmonton Global felt that the new economy will be focused on energy and clean technology, health and life sciences, manufacturing and advanced manufacturing, and food and agriculture. Again, particularly plant proteins and nutraceuticals. And of course, we have a thriving metropolis and lots of agricultural land here, and we export more plant proteins than almost any region in the world. So really, under Edmonton Global, the economic development arm, they felt we're uniquely placed to do well in the new economy. We have certifications to produce pharmaceuticals for human consumption, and we have research expertise. We also have artificial intelligence in energy and health. We are the only jurisdiction among our competitors with world-class expertise in artificial intelligence and a massive-scale energy cluster in the region, and we also have the largest-scale health authority in Canada. So there's the Edmonton Global presentation, which looks like we have a rosy future here in the region. Let's finish off the residential marketplace with a very quick look at the 2021 market forecast. And these are just real quick down and dirty numbers for the Edmonton area market provided by Tom Shearer, the 2021 chair of the Realtors Association of Edmonton. So the prediction is for single family average prices to drop 0.8% in Edmonton this year to about 426,000, and unit sales to drop 4.7% to about 10,300. Condo prices will probably drop about a further 1.2% to about 220,000, and unit sales will drop 4.6% to about 3,640. Duplex units pricing will drop about 0.8% to $330,000, and unit sales are predicted to drop 2 to 4% to about 2.4% to 2,000. Listings are predicted to drop as well, but only by 0.5 to 2.4%, which should cause an uptick in the inventory levels, and we may move into moderate buyer's market conditions this year sometime. And there are reasons for optimism for the Edmonton area. We have, as I mentioned earlier, higher than average incomes, but when we look at the average home prices in Canada, we are number 31 on the list. Number one is the Oakville, Ontario, Oakville-Milton region, at $1.15 million average price, and we're at a lowly $322,000. As well, interest rates, as we mentioned, are expected to continue at record low rates at least throughout 2021. Alberta and Edmonton have great demographics, with Edmonton being the second youngest city in Canada and very highly educated. Interesting to note, during the last 2 years, there's been increasing sales in the suburbs. Sherwood Park and Spruce Grove, suburbs of Edmonton, saw unit sales up over 9%, Beaumont over 15%, and Fort Saskatchewan up a whopping 22% in unit sales, while downtown Edmonton condos are down 24% in sales with an average price drop of 6.4%. And CMHC has recently reported a significant decrease in the number of unabsorbed single-family new builds combined with the lowest number of starts since 2009. So the question is, what effect will that have on pricing? It could have some upward effect, but given all the other things going on, it may or may not. And he finished off his talk with a reminder that these are unprecedented times, so it's very, very difficult to make predictions, and we should all take them with a grain of salt. Okay, so let's now turn to the Calgary residential market, and we'll start with a look at 2020. It was an interesting year. In Q1, sales were up 4%, and then COVID hit, and they dropped 35%. But in Q3, things rebounded there as well. Sales were up 12%, and then in Q4, another 28%. Interestingly, though, new listings in the first quarter were actually down 6%, second quarter down 26%, and in the third and fourth quarters were only up 2% each quarter. So needless to say, while the sales overall dropped 1% for the year to around 16,000, so their last 3 years have been about the same, falling from a high in 2015 of around 26,000 units, toward 2014 around 26,000 units, to around 16,000 each of the last 3 years. But new listings dropped 9% last year. This resulted in a residential inventory drop of 14%. Overall, prices have been falling in Calgary since the middle of 2014 in a general downward trend, with a couple of bumps up in 2017 and 2018 on their way back down again, bottoming out in the middle of last year. And this falling inventory and increased activity has actually led to an increase in prices. Average price in Calgary bottomed out around $412,000, $413,000, recovering to close to $425,000 by the end of the year. In keeping with every other speaker that's been predicting 2021 so far, the Calgary Real Estate Board's economist Anne-Marie Lurie also believed the pent-up demand will be showing itself in 2021. And so they are predicting improvements across all property types in Calgary as well, although sales will remain below long-term averages because of the economic conditions we're facing right now. They are predicting a slight rise to the neighborhood of 17,000 units. Regarding Alberta's GDP, they're predicting a further fall of around 5% in the first quarter of 2021, followed by the big rebound, when hopefully everyone's right on the big rebound, but they're talking about a rebound in GDP of around 13% in Q2, followed by another 9% in Q3 and 9% in Q4. So those are encouraging numbers. Looks like everybody seems to be pointing toward a strong recovery starting somewhere in the second or third quarter of the year. Again, though, oil prices are predicted to remain West Texas Intermediate. They're predicting around $40 a barrel for 2021, but we did not get a prediction for the Western Canada Select. So all we have is a prediction on the West Texas Intermediate. Calgary's employment in 2020 was pretty much the same picture as Edmonton's, with the employment growth going into negative territory, dropping at one point about 7% and then rebounding in the second half of the year, almost up to where it was in 2019. So the unemployment rate hitting a peak of around 15, 16% at the peak there, dropping back down at the end of the year to around 10.5%. No surprise, their biggest job losses during this COVID recession was similar to Edmonton's: retail, trade, and accommodation and food services. although they did take a hit as well in the professional, scientific, and technical, most likely related to the low oil price. All three of those sectors they're predicting to recover, not quite to the pre-pandemic levels, but very close in 2021, so that's a good thing. There wasn't much change in Calgary's in-migration in 2020. For the last 4 or 5 years, it's been bouncing between 1% and 2% in-migration, and in the second and third quarters, it dropped close to 1.5%, so no real major effect seen yet on that regard. And they are predicting the in-migration levels to return close to 2% by the end of 2021. Housing starts in Calgary in 2017, 2018, and 2019 were averaging around 11, 12,000 starts. 2020, that's dropped to about 9,000, and they're predicting just a little bit less than that for 2021. They are expecting new listings to rise again in 2021, but not enough to cover the increase in sales, and inventory is expected to continue dropping. With the dropping inventory, interestingly, the last couple years, Calgary's inventory has been sitting around a 4 to 6 month supply, so a fairly balanced market. The numbers are expected to drop below the 3 month supply level, so that the market conditions are definitely tightening, which should lead to some modest price gains, but the prediction is for very, very modest price gains. As is no surprise, most of us know by now, the condo slash apartment sector has been struggling the most in residential sales as of late. And interestingly, at the peak of the COVID recession in the second quarter there in Calgary, the months of supply of apartment listings actually hit 16 months very briefly before dropping back down, but it's still been above 6 months generally for a couple years, a few years now, and is predicted to dip below the 6 months, but still at best a balanced market condition for sellers. After peaking in 2014 around 4,750 apartment condominium sales, the numbers dropped off starting the next year, 2015. It dropped to around 3,250 and has been sitting around 2,600, 2,700 for the last 4 years. In 2020, it actually dipped below 2,500, and the benchmark price has been dropping steady since 2015 from a high of around 300,000 to around 240,000 where it's sitting at currently. So definitely it's been taking a little bit of a beating in that sector. That might be a sector to watch, though. I think with the world going more towards higher densities and transit-oriented development and more vibrant, walkable cities, I encourage you, if you're a small investor, to look into those, into transit-oriented development, into walkable cities, into density. And I think this might be a good sector to watch for possible future investment purposes. Anyways, moving on. Let's now look at benchmark pricing and months of supply in the different parts of the city. Most likely hit by the lagging condominium apartment sales, City Centre has seen a 2% drop year over year in their benchmark price, down to $635,600, and is sitting at 6.1 months of supply. Starting from the northwest and going circular around the city, I'm going to list the benchmark prices, the rise or the drop, and the months of supply. So the Northwest benchmark price, $529,258, for a drop of between 0 and 1% year over year, and a months of supply of 2.9. The North, $418,300, 2.7 months of supply, and the benchmark price was a drop between 1 to 2% year over year. Northeast, $365,200, drop of between 0 and 1% year over year and 3.3 months of supply. Eastern part of the city, $342,700, drop of again 0 to 1% and 2.7 months of supply. The Southeast, $443,140, drop of 1 to 2% and 2.6 months of supply. The South, $462,300, 2.7 months of supply. And again, the price was a 1 to 2% drop year over year. Ms. Lurie, the chief economist, then got into the upside and downside risks associated with COVID in the coming year. And of course, these are things we're all too familiar with. You know, when are the restrictions going to be over? How will the vaccine be distributed? How effective will the vaccines be? Will there be further job losses, foreclosures, mergers in the energy sector? We just saw Synovus purchase Husky, for example. Will the low lending rates continue, which we all believe they will, given the signals the Bank of Canada is giving out? We do have a younger demographic, another positive. Will there be long-term changes to work-from-home policies? We are, as we know now from Mr. Benjamin Tal's presentation, there are improved savings sitting out there. So there's a lot of pluses and minuses. So basically, they're just saying, as with every economic prediction, there are always risks, and just for us to be aware of. All right. Well, hopefully you haven't fallen asleep on me yet, and you're still with me. If so, go grab another cup of coffee. Let's carry on with the commercial reports. And I'm going to start by easing us into it through a very quick little report on apartment starts in the fourth quarter of 2020. This has just come out from the city of Edmonton, and it's a very short little report. So let me just break us in gently with this, and then we'll get into the stats from across the city and the different industrial, retail, office sectors and such. So in the fourth quarter of 2020, Edmonton Builders broke ground on 3,381 housing units, up 74% year over year from Q4 of 19. The 12-month moving average jumped 17.1% higher in Q4 2020 from Q3, largely due to a surge in multifamily housing starts, particularly for rental apartment units. So single-family housing starts production rose 7.1% year over year to 875 in Q4 2020. Multifamily starts, which included semi-detached, row, and apartment units, more than doubled in the fourth quarter, reaching 2,506 units from 1,125 in Q4 of 2019. And this was, as we mentioned, largely due to much higher apartment starts, particularly for the rental units. In Q4 of 2020, 1,031 rental apartment units broke ground, the strongest quarterly performance since the start of publicly released data in 1990. This is rather significant because the housing start production in Edmonton was much stronger than anticipated in 2020, with an annual gain of almost 15% year over year. And of course, the strongest performance across housing types was for apartment units, up 22% year over year. Excluding the third quarter of 2020, quarterly apartment starts posted strong year-over-year gains throughout the year. In the fourth quarter, rental apartment starts accounted for almost 52% of total apartment starts and hit the highest level of production again since the data became available. So despite hitting a quarterly record high, its share relative to overall apartment starts was about 36%, so well in line with the preceding 10-year average share. Looking ahead, the demand for housing, including for new homes, is expected to soften. This is mainly because demand fundamentals, including full-time employment incomes and population growth, have weakened considering the COVID-19 pandemic, and they may take some time to recover. Boy, I can't wait till next year to see how accurate all these predictions are. Things are so up in the air right now with COVID and oil. It'll be interesting to see. Okay, let's get into the commercial market. And this is provided courtesy of the network in Edmonton here. And there's a lot of numbers we're going to go through. So I'm just going to quickly read a lot of the numbers, and you'll be able to put the picture together yourself. I'll explain a few things in detail, but we'll mostly go over numbers. So, okay, a quick general overall look at the market. I'm going to read the numbers from 2016 through 2020, so a five-year period. So let's start with total land sales, all land sales. In 2016, they were $311 million. 2017, $324 million, then $519 million, $443 million, and down in 2020 to $237 million. Total value of all building sales in Edmonton, again, 2016 through 2020, $1.75 billion, then $1.875 billion, $2.35 billion, then $2.2 billion, and 2020, $1.5 billion. Total volumes, just over $2 billion in 2016, then $2.2 billion, $2.87 billion, $2.64 billion, and $1.79 billion. So if you can imagine, if you could see the graph, it's kind of like the roof of a house, rising for a couple years, peaking in 2018, and then dropping since then. Overall, again, we're just still at the general picture here. I'll get into the specifics shortly. But overall, condo sales made 27% of the sales market, land 26%, industrial 20%, multifamily 12%, retail 11%, and poor office down at 4%. So the overall dollar volume of sales citywide was down approximately 32% in 2020, as compared to 2019. The total number of sales was down 16%. Following an increase in land sales and dollar volume in 2018, the economic decline, along with the pandemic, definitely swayed investors' confidence in the land sector, and total sales dropped 18%, while dollar volumes decreased 46% from 2019 and 54% from 2018. Okay, so let's look at the land sales distribution. Again, this is all land sales. Of the land sales, 20, it was almost split equally between industrial, multifamily, and commercial. Commercial being retail, retail and office kind of mixed together, and urban development land. Each one of those four categories took almost 25% of the sales, with a miscellaneous making up 5%. When we look at building sales distribution, condos were 37%, followed by industrial at 27%, multifamily 16%, retail 14%, and office 6%. Okay, let's get into the multifamily market. So let's now look at sales volumes over the last 5 years. Again, 2016 to 2020, $340 million, $211 million, $121 million, $216 million, and then $205 million in 2020. So the multifamily market's been kind of an up and down. Average dollars per suite, 2016 to 2020, $125,000, $115,000, $121,000, $124,000, and in 2020, $120,000. Cap rate hasn't changed a lot. In 2016, it was at 5.8%, dropping to 5.6, 5.4. In its last 3 years, been steady around the 5.4. Total number of sales, 2016 to 2020, 56, 38, 46, 50, and 39. Again, this is all Edmonton. Okay, other apartment. I won't go into these in detail because they don't make up a huge number of sales, but high-rise, quickly, dollar volume, $85 million, $203 million, $331 million, $63 million, and $305 million. Row houses, $45 million, $5 million, nothing in 2018, $50 million, and then $50 million. Walk-up slash retail, walk-up apartments with retail on the main floor, $3.3 million, $30 million, $32 million, $1 million, $1 million. And again, you can see these are smaller market sectors, so the numbers can vary widely. So there we go. There's the multifamily market. Overall, total dollar volume, all sectors of multifamily taken into account, $473 million, $450, $695, $338, and in 2020, $591 million. So to summarize the multifamily market, after a decrease in 2019 in both total sales and dollar volumes, The sector was a bright spot in 2020. While there was a slight decrease in total sales, the dollar volume increased 63% with the sale of four high-rise apartment sales that contributed 52% of the total dollar activity. All four sales occurred in the first quarter of 2020, and they were purchased by one buyer. So that was pre-pandemic purchases. After six straight years of declining cap rates, rates increased to similar numbers seen in 2018. The average sale price per suite decreased slightly by 2.8% in 2020. 2021 will most likely take a step back in terms of dollar volumes, but may see an increase in sales transactions. With many high-quality complexes currently on the market, investors still see multifamily as a sought-after investment. And from several sources I've read in the last few weeks, that multifamily is predicted to be a relatively bright spot in the coming year. All right, let's get into the industrial market. We're not doing land yet. We'll get to land, but let's do the industrial marketplace. Multi-bay sales volume, 2016 to 2020, $134 million, $50 million, $279 million, $301 million, $67 million. So some big up and down there. Average dollars per square foot, 2016 to 2020, $145, $129, $126, $133, and $133. Cap rate, 6.3, 7.38, 6.99, 7.1, 7.48. Number of sales, 15, 12, 24, 22, and 16. Okay, let's now look at single-tenant industrial. Sales volume, $107 million, $70 million, 15, 102, and in 2020, $38 million. Average dollars per square foot, $173, $249, $176, $175, $172. Cap rate, in 2016 to 2020, 6.64, 5.9, 6.7, 6.7, and 6.95 in 2020. Number of sales, 11, 9, 4, 14, and 5. Let's look at mini storage and other miscellaneous. The quickly sales volumes in 2016 to 2020, 19 million, nothing, 6.5 million, 23 million and nothing. Average dollars per square foot in 2016, 198. In 2018, 67.50. And we only have a cap rate number for 2016. Just wasn't enough sales to really give us an accurate number any other year. The cap rate in 2016 was 6.48. The number of sales have been 1, 2, or 0 each year. So, all right, warehouse, owner-user warehouse. Sales volume 2016 to 2020, $191 million, $213 million, $232, $188, and $216 in 2020. Average dollars per square foot, $189, $211, $179, $213, and $151. Total number of sales, 60, 69, 78, 66, and 68. Total overall sales in industrial, $451 million, $335, $533, $615, and $332 last year. So a significant drop in 2020. Total number of sales, 88, 90, 108, 103, and 89. So to summarize the industrial market, the market in 2020 was led by the owner-user category. Owner-user warehouse category saw dollar sales volume increase by 15% and a total number of sales increase slightly from 66 sales in 2019 to 68 in 2020. There was a 30% decline in price per square foot, and larger complexes in particular decreased in value. Activity levels in both investment categories, single-tenant and multi-bay, decreased from a very strong 2019, while the unit price per square foot in both remained similar to the previous year. Of note, 64 of the 89 total industrial sales occurred after the pandemic started. Of the 64 sales, 28 were in the fourth quarter of 2020. Let's now look at the commercial market, which is a broad grouping of retail and office together. And I'll break down the details in a bit here. But okay, we'll start with the investment category, investors, 2016 through 2020. $504 million, $731, $863. 2019 saw $1.02 billion, dropping in 2020 to $460 million. Total number of sales, 55, 72, 69, 40, and 34. Now, in the owner-user category, sales volumes were $217 million in 2016, 232, 168, 84 in 2019, and 85 million in 2020. Number of sales, 55, 57, 65, 46, and 35. Overall sales for the category, 2016, adding everything up, 721 million, 964 million, 1.03 billion, 1.11 billion, and 2020, 545 million. So when we break that down between retail and office, in retail, general retail made up 51% of the sales, shopping centers made up 20%, and miscellaneous made up 29%. In office sales, suburban office was 75%, downtown office was only 5%, and high-rise office, 20%. So to summarize the retail and office commercial category, again, after a strong 2018 and a steady increase from 2015 to 2018, steady increase, the retail and office markets continued to decline. The office market sales decreased 73% from 2019 in total dollar volume. However, the total dollar volume for the retail sector increased 32% from 2019. So clearly, as we already know, the office market has made up a big portion of the hit. I'll be having a podcast on the office market very shortly coming out with Chad Bodez from JLL. We'll be talking about the Edmonton office market, and that'll be coming out just shortly after this podcast, so stay tuned for that. So despite the decrease in office sales, Edmonton still had four large high-rise office sales, contributing $200 million of the overall dollar volume. 10 shopping center sales occurred in 2020 with a 5.94 average capitalization rate. All right, so let's now look at the industrial and commercial condominium market. Industrial and commercial, office and retail, again, so kind of really we're looking at industrial, office, and retail together here. Condominiums have become a significant component of this market, and this has been particularly true over the past decade. So when we look at office condos, I'm going to go over this briefly, but when we look at the number of transactions in office condos over the last 5 years, 2016 to 2020, there were 71, 60, then 40, 48, and this year, 29. Retail condominiums, 24, 31, 33, 24, and 38 this year. So a little bit of a rebound there. Industrial condos, 67, 65, 73, 75, and 57. Grand total, 162, 156, 146, 147, and 124. Now let's look at the average unit prices in the condo market. Over the last 5 years, office condos price per square foot, 368, 351, 335, 306, and last year, 309. Retail condominiums, 339, 353, 396, 378, and 392. And finally, industrial condominiums obviously are going to be lower, 220, 215, 219, 214, and 197. So again, summarizing the condominium sector, overall activity in 2020 saw transactions decrease by 16%. One highlight was the retail condo sector, which increased in both sales and price per square foot. New projects were of note in the retail category, and industrial condo sales continued to lead the way in total sales, but decreased 24% from 2019 and are at a historically low 57 sales for 2020. The next lowest was in 2009, where there were 62 sales. Okay, let's now look at the industrial land category. So industrial land, 2016 to 2020, total dollar volume of sales, 24.8 million, 36, 87, 74.7, and 52.2 million last year. Average dollars per acre, $539,000, $667,000, $679,000, $659,000, and $707,000. The industrial land category, summarizing briefly, declined with the total sales decreasing by 15% last year, and there was a decrease in 30% of total dollar volume from 2019. There was, however, an increase in the average price per acre. Okay, let's look at the urban development land market. This market sector involves raw, unserviced land, typically situated within peripheral areas of the city. Lands of this type can be allocated for residential, industrial, or commercial use, and this does represent a significant aspect of the market. So let's look at some of the activity. Total dollar value of sales, 2016 to 2020, $90 million, $107.5 million, $150.8 million, $103 million, and last year dropping dramatically to $30.4 million. Average dollars per acre, $211,000, $185,000, $164,000, $155,000, and back up in 2020 to $211,000. Number of transactions, 30, 28, 40, 26, and 26. So, again, summarizing, typical of a recessionary year, sales values were down from 2019. The number of sales did stay the same, though, and increased in average price per acre. And part of this is because smaller parcel sales were the norm for the year. Okay, let's now look at the commercial land market, again, retail office. The following numbers, 2016 through 2020, total dollar value, $78 million, 95.7, 140 million, 121, and last year a big drop, 60 million. Number of transactions, 38, 35, 51, 33, and 30. So just a quick summary, commercial land continued to drop significantly from previous years, both in dollar volume and total sales. Dollar volume saw a decrease from 2018 and from 2019 saw a 50% decrease. Total sales, however, only decreased by 3 sales year over year. Okay, our last category, the multifamily land market. 2016 through 2020, $108 million, $76 million, $136 million, $117 million, and $77 million. Number of transactions, 43, 32, 44, 44, and 28. So needless to say, activity in the multifamily market decreased in both dollar volume and total sales from 2019. The dollar volume dropped 34% and sales were down 36%. So just a quick summary. The network, which has provided this information, in their 2019 forecast was anticipating a stable to declining market in 2020. Needless to say, the world was dramatically impacted by COVID-19, and a direct effect was felt by the local real estate market. 2020 started with signs of recovery in both the economy and the real estate market, and even as the pandemic slowed the market, deals that were finalized prior to the pandemic helped the months of April to June see some activity. In the last quarter of the year, sales began to increase, and while the dollar values did increase from the previous months, they remained well under averages seen in the past years. The dual effect of the pandemic and a weak economy have placed noticeable pressure on lease rates and upward pressure on vacancy levels. These variables will impact values. The economy is not expected to recover until the second half of the year, and 2021 is forecast to be another difficult year in the Edmonton marketplace. When I look at the graph of the total overall activity last year, 2020, basically it started well in January, dropping in February, March, and then April, May, June were very low months, July up a little bit, August up a little, September down a little, and then October, November, December started coming back up again, but did not get back to where it was in the beginning of the year. So a bit of a roller coaster ride for us. So there you go, folks. There's the Edmonton Commercial Market Update. If you've been listening to the entire Market Update podcast and you're still with me, thank you very much. You're very patient. I'm trying my best, but nonetheless, let's carry on. Okay, let's finish off with a look at the Calgary Commercial Marketplace. So the Commercial Market Update is the same source. It's the network, Real Estate Intelligence Network. And so I don't have as much information on the Calgary market as I did on the Edmonton market. That might be merciful at this point in time to finish things off a little quicker for you. Nonetheless, we'll go through what numbers I have. What I have is Q4 2019 numbers versus Q4 2020, and then year-over-year change, and then a little bit of commentary on each section. And you'll notice some of the commentary is very similar. So without any further ado, let's get into it. Let's look at the total value of land transactions in Calgary in 2020. In Q4 19, it was $382.7 million, a total number of 87 transactions. And in Q4 2020, there was $400,300,000, a total of 80 transactions. Year over year, it was plus $17,500,000 and minus 7 transactions. Total transactions in buildings, total value in Q4 of 19, $1.494 billion, and Q4 2020, $1.144 billion. 352 transactions Q4 of 19, 343 Q4 20. So for a total drop of $349.6 million and a drop of 9 transactions. So an overall total, all land and all buildings, Q4 19, $1.877 billion, Q4 20, $1.545 billion, 439 versus 423 transactions, a drop of $332 million overall, and 16 transactions. Just like with Edmonton, investors in Calgary's commercial took a breather during the fourth quarter of 20. While sales and total dollar volume activity were both up year over year for the first three quarters of the year, they both finished lower by the year end. CRE investment for 2020 reached $1.55 billion, representing 82% of 2019 volume, continuing a trend seen throughout the year. Commercial condos were in high demand as investors scooped up 207 units totaling $76.8 million. Industrial properties drew $450 million total, by far the most of any of the asset classes tracked. Land was another hotspot with more than $400 million invested. When we look at the year-end 2020 sales distribution, condos made up 52% of the market, land 17, industrial 13, multifamily 7%, retail 6, and office 4%. All right, so let's now get into the different sectors. We'll start with the office sector. 7 sales totaling $40 million were completed during the final quarter of 2020, bringing office investment to $228.3 million over 21 sales. This is one transaction shy of 2019, but accounting for a 17% decrease in dollar volume. Year-over-year decrease is due largely to one single big ticket sale at the end of the year. Both years had a similar number of sales, greater than 20 million, 7 in 2019 and 6 in 2020. But Q4 saw a large $100 million purchase in the Northeast, and the largest transaction of 2020 remains a $50 million purchase in the Southwest in the first quarter. So office building sales distribution in 2020, Beltline 19%, Suburban Northwest 29%, Suburban Southeast 10%, Downtown 9%, Suburban Southwest 19%, and Suburban Northeast 14%. The multifamily was again a bit of a bright spot down there as well. Investors had strong interest in the asset class right through the fourth quarter, purchasing 7 additional properties for a total of 32 sales in the year and a dollar volume of $191.4 million versus last year, $166 million and 31 transactions. So one more transaction, but a drop of around $25 million. It's a notable turnaround from the trajectory we noticed at the end of the third quarter. And helping boost the overall numbers for 2020 was a $36 million purchase on Elbow Drive, Southwest. Capitalization rates in the asset class were stable year over year, falling just a tenth of a percent to 4.7%. Average price per suite, however, rose from $174,000 at the end of Q3 19 to $209,000. All right, multifamily sales distribution. Walk-up apartments, 81% of it. Row housing, 6%. High-rise, 10%. And fourplex, 3%. So in the office market, year over year, from 2019 to 2020, we had a drop of from approximately 23 units to 19. And a drop in volume from just under 280 million to about 220 million. Okay, let's now look at the industrial sector. And owner users accounted for 14 of the 18 transactions completed in the final quarter of 2020, spending 67 million of the total 83.6 spent in the year. Over the year, owner users primarily drove the market, collectively spending $191.2 million. And the largest transaction of the group was $30.3 million in the Southeast of a 178,000-square-foot building at $171 a square foot. The balance of industrial purchases were multi-bay properties and a self-storage facility. The largest transactions occurred in the first half of the year. The most notable remains $132 million purchase of 4 properties in April and the purchase of a business park for $88 million. The breakdown of sales, single-tenant property was 80% of it, multi-bay was 18%, and self-storage 2%. Let's now have a look at the retail sector. And needless to say, compared to 2019, the dollar volume invested in retail decreased markedly, from 191.6 million to 101.7. Activity was also notably lower at just 23 transactions versus 29 in 2019. While each quarter of 2020 was slightly behind each quarter of 2019 in both dollar volume and sales activity, there was a larger drop off in Q4 of 2020. Just 19 million over 7 total sales were completed during the final quarter versus 54 million in Q4 of 19. The largest transaction of the year was $23.75 million purchase in the Southwest in the first quarter. Breakdown of sales. General retail was 39%. Shopping centers were 22%. Miscellaneous took up 17%. Auto dealerships 9% and restaurant 13%. Let's now look at the commercial condominium sector, and then we'll finish up with land. There was strong investor demand in the condominium sector, as I mentioned earlier. Activity was stable in the number of sales, decreasing by just 3 transactions, while dollar volume increased slightly. So year-over-year sales dipped to 207 from 210, but investment increased from $165 million to $173 million. Regarding prices per square foot, this continued to moderate as the year progressed, with per square foot prices declining to an average of $304 per square foot by the end of the year from $336 at the beginning of the year. Values also eased among industrial condominiums as well, decreasing to $238 from $260 from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Commercial condo sales breakdown. Industrial condos 44%, retail condos 35%, office condos 21%. Okay, let's go to land now, and then we'll do a little overall summation. Compared to 2019, the land sector was actually remarkably stable in 2020. Year-over-year dollar volume was up 17.6 million to 400.3, while transactions were down slightly from 87 to 80. The standout transaction was the purchase of 480 acres in the Northwest for 83.9 million. Within overall land sales, multifamily land continued to lead with $148 million in sales. This was supported in large part by first quarter activity, such as a $30 million purchase of 13 acres on Bow Trail Southwest. So, breakdown of sales. Industrial, 29%. Multifamily land was 32%. Commercial, 24%. Urban development land, 11%. And then the last little bit was made up, 4% special purpose, miscellaneous, 5%. And there's another industrial category, which I'm not sure what the difference is from the primary industrial category, of 1.8%. Okay, so let's do a little market synopsis and a bit of a prediction summary. So investment was down 18% overall, on only slightly lessened sales activity, but the final quarter of the year was the source of the weakness. Both investment dollar volume and sales activity were up through September 31st of the year, so it started with signs of recovery in both the economy and the real estate market and maintained pleasantly surprising momentum until the fourth quarter, when sales began an overall downward trend. The short to medium term effects of the stronger social and retail restrictions on the market in November and December are still not clear yet, but based on the trends we've noticed, the network anticipates an ongoing moderating effect in the first quarter of 2021, even though the provincial government gradually will be easing the currently tight restrictions. As many of you know, February the 8th, the restrictions begin to loosen. Given the ongoing adjustments to business and investment from the pandemic, overall sales activity is anticipated to remain essentially flat, and potential remains for noticeable value declines as we move further into 2021. There you have it, folks. That wraps up a lot of numbers today. If you stayed with me to the end, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Hopefully you got the information you need. This has been a special market update edition. Stay tuned, because after this special market report in a few days, I'll be releasing my podcast with Chad Bodez of JLL in Edmonton as we talk about trends in the office market. That's it, folks. Thank you very much. Please remember to subscribe, to like the podcast, to give us good ratings if you really enjoyed them. You've been listening to The Real World of Real Estate, and we'll see you soon. Bye for now.